Accession number 32369, reel 14.
Mr. Cassidy, reel 14. You were talking about the rats in particular being unpleasant. I presume that you'd have to have a very high standard of cleanliness in the camp, and for leaving stuff lying around and so on, food particularly.
Yep, food particularly was a thing. We're always cautioned and told not to leave anything about, biscuits, anything at all, because these animals and whatever you would find out where it was, especially the rats. But obviously the biggest, well, it was a bad thing to have it with you, but we always used to carry a bit of Tic Tac with us in our pocket anyway, even if it was a bit of chocolate or a sweet, things like that. And it was a case of, with the rats, is just to get rid of them, and we knew that they wouldn't go away altogether, even though we had a couple of cats as well in the camp, but I think they were scared of the rats as well, so we just let them go on with catching the mice. But
did they ever bite?
I never heard of anything bite, but what they did do was we had a colour sergeant who obviously looked after our rations. I think it was Colour Sergeant Durham, Alec Durham, and he was always telling us that we were self-sufficient, and if anything happened to us, we had enough rations to last for 6 months there, although they weren't fresh rations, they were cold rations. And he always took it in his a feather in his cap that he could feed the company for 6 months if anything did go disastrously wrong and we were cut off or anything like that. And then about midway through our, well, yeah, just over midway through the 6 months, and we knew the colour sergeant used to check the rations every day. He used to have them in a big underground compound, and all these boxes of hard tack and everything else, chocolate and everything, all underground. And then we found out that one day he'd opened up the doors or whatever it was that secured them, and he'd found a little hole in one of the boxes. And I think he was a bit bemused at first to find out how somebody had gotten in and bit a hole in them and all that. And it wasn't until he started lifting the boxes out that he'd found out that these rats had dug in from the other side of the compound and tunnelled through, and they'd eaten their way through all the rations, and this little hole that he'd found at the front was that just broke through to the end of the rations, and they'd eaten right the way through them. Although it was a big talking point at the time, and many a joke made on it, we realised how serious it was, because we suddenly found that we had no food, no rations, even though we used to get these paradrops every couple of days, which were hit and missy. But we knew then that all this time of being self-sufficient wasn't true, because while we were thinking, well, we've always got enough food to eat anyway, the rats had other business, and they were busy. No wonder they were big with all this stuff that had been eaten every day, all the time we'd been there. So that was our rations that went by and by.
What time did your day start?
First light, you'll be up, and Santu was at first light, just before first light. Everybody would be up then, and it would last for about 5 minutes until the order to stand down was given. And it was a case of you stood in your bunkers on guard and you peered out. You had different lines of fire to take up, and that was done every morning and every night time. And also, on the night time, we used to have a perimeter where the trip flares and things like that were primed in case we had unwelcome visitors during the night. And the other thing was, first thing in the morning at stand two, someone had to go out and unprime the trip flares and whatever again. I put the pins back in that had been removed to release the trip wire and things like that. But first thing in the morning, a lot of people are not at the best, and if you were half asleep, it was very easy to forget where the trip wires were, even though you might have put them out yourself the night before. And every now and again, you would hear the pop of the trip flare going up, and the flare would be set off. You know, so it was that did happen on occasions as well. But it was a routine that had to be done every morning and every night. So the camp, once it came to darkness, was suddenly primed outside and inside until first light the next morning.
So you'd do your stand two and then stand down. What would be the next task that you would be?
After that would be a case of your latrine duties. You go to the toilet, you go to the there was an assembly point where you could clean your teeth and have a wash and brush up, and we didn't have showers as such, although there was a mobile, there was lots of these indications of where the assault pioneers had set up these different things with 45 gallon drums and shower heads and things like that, but they were an extreme luxury as such, and it was mainly a case of a quick wash.
Was your water rationed?
Not as much. We always seem to have plenty of water. The only time it was rationed and we knew it was when the patrols were out, and although they had they always came across streams and all that, you'd be very careful on the water that they were drinking, and that's when the water purification tablets did come into their job then, when they had to drop them in the water bottles and they cleaned the water for them. But,
was there a large water storage?
There was a big tank, yeah, booze tank, yeah, which was filled with either 45 gallon drums or the jerry cans, which were delivered to us on occasion. So
after you'd finished your ablutions, as it were,
yeah.
What was the correct breakfast?
Breakfast was the main meal.
What were they feeding you in the jungle?
Breakfast was a case of getting your mess tins and going up in different groups to the cookhouse. We had a couple of army catering corps people there, and also battalion cooks as well. So there's plenty of them. But fresh rations were a luxury. Now and again, we would get fruit, but the main meals themselves would be sausage and beans out of the can, and even bully beef and things like that on the morning. For breakfast, bread. Sometimes we did get bread, and that was good to have, and butter and things like that. But a lot of the stuff was in cans, very rarely. Now and again, some bacon would appear from somewhere, and eggs. We would have fried eggs and things like that. But breakfast was generally a case of the main meal of the day anyway. And it was a time when it was probably the coolest part of the day as well, so you could sometimes enjoy a good breakfast, but on the monotony of changing over what you were eating at breakfast, there wasn't much variation that you could have. So it was it was fulfilling. And
typical British rations.
The other thing was you took your mess tins up there and you filled them up with what you wanted, and you brought them back again, you know, so, and you ate them, and that was it. And then you cleaned your mess tins, and there was tea on. Tea was the other big thing that we had, and that was generally a good thing because the water was boiled, and there was milk and a bit of sugar. We took sugar as well, so it was always nice to have a cup of tea, and we did get that as well. So, by and by, nobody starved, and there was now and again we were given a treat. Of when we went to the courthouse, and well, we didn't know what was on the menu until we got there, and we would find out that there was a from somewhere, somehow something had turned up out of the blue, and it was nice for eating. And we were also allowed a can of beer as well, unless we were on duty, and that was all.
And that was per day, was it? A can of beer a day?
Yeah, but that was all. You were restricted to that, and you were aware what the consequences were if you exceeded the one can as well. I'm not saying it didn't happen, but there again, I think people understood how, you know, if somebody didn't want their can, then what the consequences were for passing it on to somebody else and making them, you know, exhume a bit more beer than they should have.
Were you able to keep the beer cool?
Yeah, we put them in these jerry cans of water and just steep them in that, or if we're out somewhere or anything, I know that they, if they did have them anywhere, some of them had these little streams passing by, and they used to put them in the cold water streams and keep them cool in that. But by and large, I would think that it was very difficult to keep food cool in as much, and especially the fresh stuff. It was more or less, once it had been dropped, it was more or less eaten within 24 hours or 48 hours anyway. Yeah.
So what happened then after that? I mean, you would start your daily routine, presumably.
Yeah.
And in your situation, what was your daily routine?
There would be a company commander's orders, mainly after breakfast, where all the platoon commanders met and were briefed by the company commander on the day's orders and what would happen, which patrols were going out, where they were going to, and the times, estimated times of arrival at different points. Also was given out the daily routine in the camp. If anyone was sick, of course, things happened where people had dental problems and things like that, you know. If a helicopter was needed, then this would be given at the brief and what time it was expected in. If we were expecting a drop, a parachute drop of food, then the duties were given out for that, because obviously the area where it was dropped had to be secured and guarded as well for when the food came down. And then obviously it had to be retrieved from where it landed and brought back up to camp as well, because the drop zone was always at the bottom of the hill in a landing zone, so it had to be carried from there up to the top to where the camp was as well, which was, although we did have the help of some of the locals, they didn't do all the donkey work, you know. We did have Eban trackers as well, who went out with our patrols, and more or less they spoke, most of them spoke good English really, and one of them was allocated to each patrol that went out to help with the tracking, and they could see the signs of any enemy activity before anybody else, and they would pass it on. So they were good people then.
So you'd have your officer's briefing, as you say, and then, you know, what would be your normal day, normal routine?
We'd come back, and then obviously we would be cleaning the weapons, our own personal weapons, and then the mortars as well after firing them the night before.
And that was a daily thing?
Every day. Yeah, every day they were cleaned. The ammunition had to be checked and orders put in for more if we needed more of it, and the cleaning of the our accommodation as such, the tidy up area, things like that, and then we would there was something happened, although there was no social activity going on during the day, there was a lot of things actually happening in the camp and talking of the day's activities and what had happened yesterday, and the different news from our other companies, what was happening and how they were getting on. But of course the biggest part of the day was the daily mail drop, when the mail came, when we received letters from home, and more so then in Borneo than anywhere else that we'd been, people always look forward to the newspapers and the mail when we were in Borneo, and this was a daily activity. Oh, it should have been daily. Sometimes we didn't get any mail for 2 or 3 days, depending on the weather as well. But when it did come, there was always a fuss on who'd getting letters and who hadn't got any letters, and it was always a good talking point once you'd read your letter to pass the news on what was happening in your hometown or in your family, and have a general talk around about it. So it was
letters which was not good news.
Of course, yes. We had a few people who were given news by letter as well of things, the tragedies at home, and the first they would be up and wanting to see the company commander to see if there's anything they could do about it. And then those things happening elsewhere in the hometowns where, they said, well, I wish I was home for to help them sort this problem out and that problem out. So,
was anyone sent back on compassionate grounds at all?
Yeah, we had 2 or 3 people sent back, either because
that could happen.
Yes, quite easily. Yes, the families were left back in UK, and obviously things happened there. So there was people who were sent back home, and sometimes they returned, sometimes they didn't. And as long as we knew that things were all right at home, we were okay there. I mean, some of the things that we would have liked to have been home for, to help out with the families and things like that, we knew it was impossible to do until this 6 months was over. So a lot of the time we knew we were going to be in Borneo until the 6 months was up, so we resigned to that fact anyway.
Did you get an issue of cigarettes?
Cigarettes. I mean, in those days, in the 60s, cigarettes was still a social, well, it was a social habit, and every other one, I think, smoked. I think I tried at the time, but I never got away with them very much. But now and again, I would have a smoke, and there was always rations for cigarettes. I mean, it wasn't as though they were expensive or anything like that. There was always plenty of naffy cigarettes there. So, and it was a case of not people getting a packet and smoking them themselves. They would always pass them round to one another. It was done in a circle of friends, and I would say every other person smoked. Although there was a time and a place where they were allowed to smoke, and even though you're out in the open, the patrols had to be very careful when they went out, because the, like I said before, the smells in the jungle travel so far, any whiff of a smoke could be picked up for miles, probably, from anyone who had a good nose. So whether they were allowed to take them out on patrols, I'm not sure. I think they did, but they had to wait until they got to certain areas where they would be allowed a smoke. So that was it. And it was always cigarettes. Now and again you'd see somebody smoking a cigar and whatever, but it was always cigarettes. There was a lot of that going on at that time. It was
So you kept pretty busy, were they, during the working day?
Yeah, I think boredom. It was very boredom. Easy to slip into boredom, because you could if you'd been on guard duty at night time, and obviously you know 2 hours on and 2 hours off does take its toll. But generally, when you had been doing that, the next day you would be given, after your breakfast and the debriefing was over, you were left to yourself then, and it was very easy just to go back to your accommodation and lie down and just sleep for the rest of the day off and on, you know. And then that's how boredom did set in, you know. It was you did really have to activate yourself to go around different places and talk to different people and keep your mind active and keep yourself social, really.
Did it cause any problems, boredom? You know, people acting against it, being awkward, whatever?
I think it caused like short-tempered. I think it had a distinct link up with being short-tempered, and the times when you would say, "No, I can't be bothered to do that," or you would lose your temper with somebody where normally you wouldn't do that sort of thing. But on the whole, I mean, people weren't falling out with each other left, right and centre, but there was a lot of nitty-gritty things that would be elaborated on, where at one time they would be swept under the carpet and forgotten about. It was surprising how many small things turned up and were made a great thing of, you know. Especially if somebody was late taken over on one of the duties or something like that, and I think it was all down to the social activities and lack of them, because you were so restricted to where you could go and what you could do, it was just keeping yourself active yourself, and sharing other people's views and points, and getting yourself interested in books. There was a lot of time for reading and things like that. So
it was a good supply of reading coming in.
Yeah, there was books there you could read. Not many, I don't think, but they were passed around, so you had a choice. You know, there would be swapped and things like that. And in the colour sergeant always kept a few books under the table as well for anybody if they wanted to read them.
Did you get any parcels coming from home in the time you were there?
Just a few. I didn't see many of them, and it wasn't as though, you know, those Red Cross parcels or anything like that. Now and again, a parcel would arrive and somebody would be opening up and find different odds and ends that we hadn't had over there, although we knew when we were on R&R that would be open, we would start getting fresh rations then, and we were in this hotel base where we plenty of drink, plenty of eating, food and nightlife and everything like that for this week on R&R, and it was also a time where we were met up with our other companies as well, some of them. I mean, they were just sections at a time were sent on R&R, but it was amazing how many we met up with from A and B company and B company and D company, in this R&R. So
where were you sent to? Was it a town or?
It was a small town. Yeah.
Do you remember its name?
I can't remember its name on where it was, but it was.
With my ladies around as well.
Yeah, there was everything there, you know, and we had money to spend, and we just had a good time, you know, and made up for the weeks of solitary confinement that we'd spent in the first half up in the camp. So, but it went over so quickly that it was unbelievable, and before long you were back into your company base again, and then you were waiting until the days were coming, until you got the orders that you were nearing the time when you would be relieved.
Had you been told how long you'd be there?
We were told 6 months, but the exact week when we were going to leave was never discussed or anything like that, but we said we would be there for 6 months.
Was there an end to the working day at a particular time, say 5 o'clock at night or something, when you in effect were on your own for the rest of the time, making your own entertainments, whatever?
We had a tea, the cookhouse meal would be round about 5 o'clock time, so that after that was just about nearing the end of the day. After you'd eaten that meal, then it was a case of cleaning up and getting ready for stand two again, and letting dusk fall in, and then from then on it was back to your accommodation, and you were there really. Very little activity during the night, during darkness hours, and making yourself chit-chat with your friends and that in your accommodation where you were at. So it was a long night, but there was plenty of time to sleep.
Did the darkness come down quickly? Or
it did, yes. It was surprising in the jungle. It crept in, and within 20 minutes from light, it went to dark.
There's a lot of noise at night from
the chirping of the animals and insects, whatever there were, and the jungle noises as such, you know. But you all got used to them. And although when we first went there, we said it even distracted people going to sleep. They said the noises of the jungle. After we'd been there a while, it just became every day part and parcel of the job. And the one thing I was disappointed with the 6 months was there. We knew that Borneo was a hive of activity for the orangutan apes. And I never saw one yet. Never seen one yet. All the time in 6 months I didn't see one of them. And I was highly disappointed when I come back and I looked, turned the television on, and they said, oh, Borneo is full of these orangutans and whatever. And I told my mother, I said I didn't even see one.
Were irregular inspections carried out by officers?
Oh yes, I mean we would have a base inspection every other, a few on a daily basis by the platoon sergeant, probably he would do it, and then on a weekly basis by the platoon officer. And then now and again by the company commander as well. So we had to clean up, and every day make ourselves. It wasn't spit and polish as such. We didn't have brasses to clean or anything like that. But the general living accommodation area, things like that, we had to keep clean and workable, and make sure that they were livable in, not left to go to disarray.